This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts. And if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorwath. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. Now, whilst here in the UK we moan about the cost of electricity, I think we have to acknowledge that there are lots of good things to say about it. For a start, with only a few exceptions, our electricity supply is constant and dependable. You know, think about it, a power cut is a notable event, not something that happens with annoying regularity. Secondly, increasing amounts of our electricity production is from renewable sources. The Department for Energy and Security and Net Zero figures show that renewables generated a record 52.5% of the UK's electricity last year. If you live in a country where you keep having to resort to electricity from a home generator, then the chances are that that generator runs on a fossil fuel with all the emissions and the pollution that that entails. So in places like Nigeria, the lack of a reliable electricity supply is a big problem for people in many ways, but also for the environment. Step in Professor Havizalaka, Associate Dean of Research and Enterprise at Hertfordshire Business School and Director of the University's Big Data Tech and Innovation Lab. Professor Havizalaka, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on Environment Matters today. So could you start by telling us about your experience growing up in Nigeria and the difficulties that you and your community suffered because of the lack of a reliable electricity supply?
Thank you very much. My pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me. I grew up in Nigeria, so I experienced this firsthand. Unreliable or non-existent electricity was just part of life. That never left me, really. So when I joined the University of Hertfordshire, I realized I had the research tools and the platform to actually do something about it. I struggled to study. We used to use candlelight. It affected our eyes. It affected our health. We couldn't have fun during the holidays. Good to have fun outdoors, but indoors, there was barely light, and we spent a lot of money on generator, obviously, my parents at the time. So had a lot of impact in different ways. That never left me. While in Hertfordshire, I reached out to an old contact called Abdul Malik, who's now the director of Powerbox Engineering Limited in Nigeria. And together we wrote a proposal to Innovate UK, the UK's innovation agency, for funding to develop an affordable, locally made solar system. It was successful, and that's how Powerbox began, essentially.
Okay. So it sounds like the lack of reliable electricity didn't just stop you from doing things, but it also had a detrimental impact on you because you had to use things like candles instead, which therefore impacted your health as well. So as you've said, you decided to set out to try and find a solution. So what kind of criteria did you have for the product that you were trying to create?
So we looked at it and said, okay, to design Powerbox, we went out to speak with people who would actually use it. Of course, I've got my experience, but some experiences are unique. I have to listen to others and how it affects them. Through the Local Government Chairman Association, the North Central Micro Businesses Association, we also drew on our own feasibility studies. The criteria were clear. It had to be affordable for low-income households and micro businesses. You know, people earning very little. It had to use local content and locally sourced materials to keep the cost down because imported systems are priced out of reach. We've got some imported systems that can do something similar but quite expensive in the context of Nigeria. It needed to be able to run basic appliances, laptop, TV, water pumps, things that would allow everyday activities at home in the offices to operate. These were the criteria that we were looking for. Of course, essentially, we wanted something that wouldn't disturb the environment, because the noise from the generator, the carbon emission from the generator, and the cost of the fuel was massive, you know, in how we sort of found solution to the lack of electricity. And that still plays out now, and it's a big deal. So those were the criteria that we looked at the time.
Okay, so sustainability and the impacting the environment was an important part, but also going out and asking the people who would actually be using the power box. So am I right in thinking that the power box is essentially a battery, a bit like a battery that people might have for storing solar electricity in the UK? But what kind of modifications did you have to do to make it appropriate to the situation in Nigeria?
Well, like I said earlier, some of the key criteria is to use locally sourced materials. That's one of the biggest things, and to keep it very affordable. So once we sort of used locally sourced material and we kept it affordable based on that, that was essentially the biggest aspect of it, to make sure that Nigerians could afford it. The low and middle class essentially were our targets. Most of the rich people or upper middle class have got enough money to install solar on their roof and use that in place of generators where necessary.
Yeah, indeed. And how about, I mean, things do break, don't they? So how have you ensured that if things go wrong with the power box, then people locally will be able to fix it?
We are at an early stage, and the plan is to have outlets in various states and to make sure that we train people who can do this. But the first thing we've done so far is that we've made it as generic as possible in terms of what general technicians can deal with. So when we send these power boxes out, we can get on a phone call to tell someone how to install it. And if there's an issue, we can get on a phone call to tell a technician how to deal with it. It's quite straightforward in how we fix it and how we install it at the moment. That's what we've done so far. But in the long run, the plan is to make sure we sort of have services and sales outlets all around the country as we expand.
Okay, so actually it should be good for local employment as well as helping with electricity supply as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which sounds good. So are people in Nigeria already using the Powerbox SE, and do you have any feedback from them?
Yes, we do have feedback from them. We've got around 70 units running in Kaduna State right now. We've got a few out in Lagos. We're receiving a lot of inquiries, and the impact is immediate and visible. A tailor I visited told me that before Powerbox, every time the power went out, she had to switch to a manual sewing machine, and everything slowed down. Customers complained. She lost income. Now she told me, I mean, in her own words, pidgin English, broken English, she said, I feel still, even when there is no light and my customers happy, well, which essentially means that even when there is no electricity, she can still use her automatic machine, and that's helped her to retain customers, and her customers are happy. Women are using electric blenders instead of grinding by hand. They're running small washing machines at home instead of washing by hand. A teacher told us his students can now study after dark, which applies very well to me, you know, in the past when I was young and there. So, and every single one of those households has stopped running a petrol generator. So the carbon saving is direct and measurable, multiplied across every unit we deploy. So it's great, you know, experience is given to people. People are happy. It's doing very well from that perspective. And that's the kind of impact we want to do at University of Hertfordshire.
Yeah, it did. It must make you very happy to know that you've been able to help people in this truly profound way.
Absolutely. It gives you a lot of satisfaction, especially as it aligns with the strategy of the university, which says we want to do, you know, research that impacts people's life. That's the essence of research. We don't just publish it in journals. We do things that actually have impact of people on people's life, positive impact.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I wondered if you could tell us, because you're very much involved in AI, could you tell us a little bit about the AI angle of the Powerbox SE?
Well, what makes Powerbox more than just a battery, as you've, you know, alluded to earlier, that is like a battery storing energy? what makes it more than just a battery is the intelligence built into it. We've developed AI models built right here at University of Hertfordshire, you know, that take weather forecasts data and predict how much solar energy the box will generate over the coming days. Then the system tells the user what appliances they can run and for how long, so family can plan. Tomorrow is cloudy, so we'll charge the phone and run the lights, but save the TV for the evening. You know, it turns a passive battery into a smart energy manager for the household, essentially.
Yeah, that sounds great. And actually, when you put it like that, you realise what an important part of the PABOX SE that is. So the PABOX's first phase was funded by Innovate UK. And I just wondered what you needed to scale this up and allow even more people to benefit from it.
Absolutely. We've got that on our minds. We've got two exciting directions. First, we've developed an even smaller version designed for solar-powered public rental kiosks, so people can go into smart rental kiosks using their mobile app. They can then go in, scan and rent a device, take it home, take it to the office, take it to a friend's place in the evening, and return it whenever they are done. You only pay for what you use, which makes clean energy accessible even to people who can't afford to buy their own power box units, as cheap as it is. Second, the bigger picture, it sits within a program called Spark that we are developing with UNIDU, a UN arm. It's a solar-powered on-demand rental network starting in Lagos, then expanding across Nigeria and ultimately to other African countries facing the same energy access gap. We've got a few companies, organizations reaching out to us, wanting to collaborate to us on this, and we are exploring those inquiries at the moment. So energy poverty and generator pollution aren't uniquely Nigerian problems. They are shared across much of sub-Saharan Africa. So Nigeria is our proving ground, not our ceiling, and we are hoping to expand this rapidly because it will make it really, really accessible to the very poorest.
That sounds brilliant, and it's really good that you're really working to try and make this product as accessible to people as possible. So do you have anything you'd like to say just to finish off?
Yeah, I'll just say at the University of Hertfordshire, we have one of the best business schools in the UK, and our students rate their satisfaction well above the national average. What I'm doing with PABOX is really just the tip of the iceberg. If anyone listening wants to know more about our research or our courses, they should visit herts.ac.uk. And if there are potential partners or investors listening who want to help us scale energy access across Africa, deal with hunger and malnutrition, use contemporary technologies like AI to improve lives and livelihoods, please do get in touch. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm sure people will be inspired by the wonderful work that you've just told about today. Thank you for telling us about it.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
I was talking there to Professor Hafeez Alaka, Associate Dean of Research and Enterprise at Hertfordshire Business School and Director of the University's Big Data Tech and Innovation Lab. And I think it's brilliant to hear how innovation here in Hertfordshire is providing affordable solutions for people in African countries so that they can enjoy the benefits that electricity can bring without the environmental and health downsides caused by electricity production from fossil fuels. I absolutely love it when helping the environment and helping people goes hand in hand. And talking of micro renewable energy solutions, plug-in solar panels become legal in the UK on the 27th of August. And I'm planning a show talking about the pros, cons and pitfalls. So is this something that you're interested in? Perhaps it's something that you already have experience of in another country, perhaps. Are you someone who installs or sells plug-in solar panels? Well, I'd love to hear from you. Do drop me an email on amanda.yorworth@mix926.com or look for Environment Matters on Mix92.6 on Facebook. And in fact, solar power has been a good news story for the UK more generally this year. The UK government recently published new data showing that more than 27,000 solar installations were completed in the UK in March 2026, the highest monthly total since 2012. And this brings the total number of solar installations across solar farms and rooftops in the UK to more than 2 million for the first time. Now, the escalation was driven for the most part by rooftop solar, with 2/3 of the installations being new solar panels on homes, which is great news. And all those new solar panels were put to excellent use in the exceptionally hot, sunny weather this year. According to Renewable Energy magazine, during June's heatwave, 45.9% more solar electricity was produced than the equivalent four-day period the previous week. And during July's heatwave, daily solar generation exceeded 110 gigawatt hours on 11 of the 12 days. And in case your understanding of the size of a gigawatt hour is as poor as mine is, Renewable Energy magazine used utility bidders' energy cost of everything data to calculate that the 1.85 terawatt hours of solar electricity generated during those two heat waves alone would have been enough for about 1.85 billion washing machine cycles, more than 617 million 10-mile EV journeys, or more than 264 million years of charging a mobile phone. Wow. And if you are interested in local, small-scale, decentralised renewable energy production, then Alban Community Energy is a registered community benefit society with the aim of generating lasting value through a people-powered energy transition. They are owned and democratically controlled by their members, and their purpose primarily is to benefit the communities across St Albans District. As well as reducing energy bills for their host sites and offering independent energy services, they plan to invest their profits into local initiatives through a community benefit fund. Now, official membership isn't open yet, but you're encouraged to join their mailing list so that you'll be the first to find out when and how you can become a member. And you can find out more about Alban Community Energy by listening to my conversation with one of their leaders, Tony Elkington, which you'll find on the podcast page of mix926.com. I will be with you at the same time next week, but until then, thank you for listening.